From the heartland of America, the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Nothing like a Halloween night on a Friday. We're just missing a full moon, that's all. Next hour, we begin Ghost to Ghost. Here's what's happening. Very tragic story as Virgin Galactic's Spaceship 2 space tourism rocket crashed during a test flight over the Mojave Desert Friday, killing one of the two pilots aboard, seriously injuring the other pilot. Friday's flight marked the 55th time for the spaceship, which was intended to be the first of a line of craft that would open space to paying civilians. At 60 feet long, Spaceship 2 features two large windows for each of up to six passengers, one on the side and one overhead. Virgin Galactic, owned by Branson's Virgin Group and a company out of Abu Dhabi, sells seats on each prospective journey for $250,000 each, with full payment due at the time of booking. The company says the future astronauts, as it calls customers, have visited Branson's Caribbean home, Necker Island, and they've gone through G-Force training. Stephen Hawking, the physicist, Justin Bieber, the singer, Ashton Kutcher, Russell Brand are among the celebrities to join up for the flights. Virgin Galactic reports taking deposits of more than $80 million from about 700 people who have got to be a little concerned right now after this crash. A Houston area woman must serve 3 years in prison for putting her boyfriend's gun in his son's backpack just to get the child in trouble at school. Investigators say that the woman believed the 13-year-old boy had mistreated her two younger children. So the kid goes to school. He's got a gun in his backpack. He doesn't know about it. All of a sudden, an anonymous call, linked to the woman, of course, led to the gun being found. As we've been reporting, Ebola is a lot easier to catch than health officials have admitted and can be contracted by contact with a doorknob contaminated by a sneeze from an infected person an hour or more before. It's a story that's starting to hit all across the country now. The UN chief has said that discrimination against workers who return home from Ebola crisis in West Africa is unacceptable. Strict quarantine rules are hampering aid efforts, he said, when more health workers are needed in order to deal with the crisis. Look, I don't agree with that. We need to protect our country from people coming here with Ebola. It's not discrimination. It's smart. Google is aiming to diagnose cancers, impending heart attacks or strokes and other diseases at a much earlier stage than is currently possible. The company is working on technology that combines disease-detecting nanoparticles, which would enter a patient's bloodstream via a swallowed pill, with a worn wrist sensor. How about that? President Barack Obama is about to do what no president has done in the past 50 years, have two awful midterm elections in a row. In fact, the president is likely to have the worst midterm numbers of any two-term president going back to Democrat Harry Truman. Truman lost a total of 83 House seats during his two midterms, while Republican Dwight Eisenhower lost a combined 66 House seats in 1954 and 55. Midterm elections coming up on Tuesday. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com, with us. John, what do you think? Any predictions?
Well, I think it's going to be very close, but I think the Republicans have a pretty good shot of taking back the Senate. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, it doesn't really make any difference because the vote is so tight as it is that, you know, the gridlock will continue into the end of the Obama presidency. But I think, you know, when people look at Obama, they'll trace this to a date in March of 2010 when he signed the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. It hasn't protected patients, and it hasn't been affordable. And the result of this private sector venture into healthcare has given insurance companies a license to gouge and to engage in the biggest piracy since Enron. And at the same time, there's no way that there's any cooperation in Congress to fix the problems with Obamacare. So it's going to be very interesting to see if as the campaign emerges, you know, after these midterms, you start seeing people, you know, raising the issue of repealing again and going back to it. Single-payer system. But I think that that's really, when you really look at it, the major thing that's killed the Obama coattails, that they don't exist.
John, Mark Begich, the senator from Alaska, Democrat, who is the brother of one of our regular guests, Nick Begich, doesn't even want to mention President Obama's name.
Well, they want to, you know, kind of disassociate from him. You know, if they can disconnect from him, they, you know, his the negative coattail with an approval rating of around 40% is really hurting Democratic candidates around the country. Incumbents are being hurt, and new Democrats that would like to take office. I think the it's interesting how, when you look at the economy right now, for instance, with the stock market in unprecedented territory, with budget deficits at the lowest levels in years, and in anticipated GDP growth in the neighborhood of 4%, that you know, that there should be a huge coattail for Obama. But the focus now is on Obamacare, and the Republicans have done a good job of keeping the electorate and the voters focused on that.
So, what'd you dress up for Halloween, John? A donkey or an elephant?
I'm kind of somewhere between. I'm actually at the Amundsen right now, you know, away, and there I'm being looked at as their, you know, the play that we're seeing down here is like it's really quite good, but it's a lot of fun. I think the Halloween night is really going to be, they're going to be howling on election night.
Oh, they sure will. John, go and enjoy the rest of the show there. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. U.S. consumer spending fell for the first time in 8 months in September, suggesting the economy lost some of its momentum during the heading into the fourth quarter. Stocks, by the way, as John just mentioned, are just soaring right now. Zoologists say a skin-eating fungus threatens salamanders and newts across Europe and probably arrived on pet amphibians imported from Asia. It was first discovered in the Netherlands in 2013 after wiping out all but 10 of the country's fire salamanders. Now, what's so important about talking about a fungus on a salamander? It could happen to us eventually. Beware. Well, there's a big story going all around the world that NASA has confirmed 6 days of darkness in December. It's a fake story. It's not real. It's circulating on Twitter, Facebook. It's all over the place. It's amazing how fast something like this travels. It's a hoax. I'll tell you what's not a hoax, the work of Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. What's up this week, Peter?
A lot going on, George, and I'm going to try to set the stage for ghost to ghost tonight.
You got
it. And then I'm going to go out and do some late-night trick-or-treating to get my candy supply laid in for the winter. Of course, last night was the 76th anniversary of Orson Welles' great radio broadcast, The War of the Worlds, scared the holy living gee willikers out of the American people for one night. So that's always a good start for any Halloween night. It's been a couple of weeks since I've been on, so I've got about 400 or 500 really good reports to work with tonight.
Well, you can only give us a few.
I'll keep it under 300, I promise.
Knowing you, Davenport, you'll give us all, you get all of them out.
Yeah. I'd like to go back a couple of weeks to the 17th of October, Friday night. Three very, very interesting, very dramatic sightings in my old state of New Hampshire. From mid-New Hampshire and the northern reaches, Lancaster, New Hampshire, two adult witnesses, saw a whole bunch of extremely bright lights. The reason I find that interesting is that people who were about 60 miles to the south of them were looking at the same thing at the same time. The interesting thing is that they turned off and then turned back on. When they turned back on, people could see the outline of a dark ship above their head. Very, very interesting. If anybody saw those lights in New Hampshire on the 17th of October, we'd love to hear from you. The next night, a very dramatic sighting from Troutdale, Oregon, just east of Portland, east of the Portland International Airport, in fact. Three people in three independent witnesses out about 10 miles east of Portland International Airport saw a cluster of, they estimated, 15 to 20 of these orange lights that I've been talking about for so many years, actually, now. Yesterday afternoon, 11:15 a.m., down in your area, George, a gentleman was looking at, he estimated, 19 white lights that were being chaperoned by a red light, looked at them with his binoculars. We hope to have that video on our website in the next several days if we get it. And all sorts of things going on tonight in Georgia in particular. A couple saw a blue light come down out of the sky and stop. It split into two and hovered for 30 seconds, they reported, then combined and shot off into the night sky. Last interesting report from Charleston, Rhode Island tonight, a couple were outside trick-or-treating. They heard, they did not see, they heard what they call an engine sound that was winding down. They looked up, they saw nothing, and suddenly the lights in their house started flickering and went out, then immediately came back on. Very, very interesting. Lots going on. If people have seen anything recently, we'd encourage them to write it all down. Go to our website, ufocenter.com, and submit a written report. And I'm looking forward to seeing you in Toronto next weekend, George. Should be a lot of fun.
That'll be fun indeed. By the way, if you want to get out there to see Peter Davenport and some other incredible guests in Toronto at my event, simply go to georgenorilive.com. Peter, thanks so much. Enjoy the rest of the Halloween. Talking about Halloween, how about These Haunted Hills? Tabitha Prock joins me next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Tabitha Prock with us, a local historian and writer from Tennessee. She's enjoyed paranormal and supernatural stories from that area since childhood, and her love for the mountain culture and all things supernatural prompted her to collect and research the ghost stories, legends, and superstitions of Southeast Tennessee. She put them in a work called These Haunted Hills. Tabitha, happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, George.
What a great time of the year, isn't it?
It is. I'm sitting here by the fire, and we've stocked up on our candy, and all of these stories are just circulating through the county because this is the time of year that you tell the ghost stories.
I love it. I love it indeed. Tabitha, how long have you been doing this?
Oh, forever, I think. I sort of grew up in a family of storytellers, and I'm not sure who enjoyed whether they enjoyed telling them more than I enjoyed listening. I'm not sure. I've always loved the stories that my parents and family told to me as a child. And so when I was about 9 years old, I told my grandmother, I said, I'm going to write a book about all of your stories, put them all together. And so I finally did that just before she passed away in 2013. And she was just on cloud nine. She just loved to have those in one little volume that she could share with all of her family and friends.
Now, tell me about this region in Tennessee. Tell me what's so spooky about it.
There's just so much. You know, they say on Halloween, the veil is very thin, and I really feel like Monroe County, the veil is thin all the time because we have so many different things happening around here. We have everything from strange sightings of creatures to crop circles and all sorts of haunted houses, haunted places. It's actually the fourth largest county in the state of Tennessee, but only in land. We are at the foothills of the Smoky Mountains. Cherokee National Forest is here in the county, so we're just surrounded by ancient forests and the ancestral lands of the Cherokee, like I said, and it's just a beautiful pastoral place, but very, very old indeed, with I think there were more than 40 Native American mounds discovered here that were
40. Wow.
Yeah, more, at least 40 or more that were all over the county because it was such a land for all of the Native Americans here, and probably far more ancient, all the way back, I think, at least 9,500 years.
All right, tell us, what has been the scariest story that you've ever heard or encountered in that area?
Okay, this story really got me. It was the spookiest thing that I have ever heard. And it occurs in a little pastoral community called Rural Vale. Beautiful name, beautiful area. There's a house there that's about a little over 100 years old. And a family moved into the house in the 1990s. They had a teenage daughter and a small son. And the little boy, as soon as they moved in, he started to really act out and do things that were just not like him. He actually ended up chasing the family around the house with a butcher knife, and the mom was just beside herself. And so one day she asked him finally, "Why are you doing these things?" And he said, "Well, my friend told me to do these things." And she said, "Who is your friend?"
Yeah, really?
Yeah, who is this friend telling you to do this stuff, you know, chase us with butcher knives? So he said, "Well, my friend lives in the front yard. He goes into the tree, and he goes underground, and that's where his home is. And he tells me that, you know, I can do all these bad things and get away with it." And so this really bothered the family. They didn't know what to do. Well, the dad said, "We have to get rid of this tree." So they go out, and they cut the tree down, and the tree was beautiful, a beautiful green tree. But when they cut it down, the interior of the tree was black, like it had been burned, and it was actually even charred looking. So they pulled the stump up, totally burned the tree, literally burned it, and the little friend went away and never came back.
With these paranormal experiences that you've had a lot since you were a little girl, did you find it to be unusual or usual?
Well, I think that it was really something that, growing up, we just it became very commonplace for us. We heard all the stories. There were so many circulating around the county that it was just kind of, oh, you know, we have ghosts in just about every nook and cranny of this county. There's something strange, and it just became a part of our culture.
Now, when you look at some of the historical areas in your region, did you find that they are different from certain other spots around the country?
Actually, there are a lot of geological anomalies here that are very interesting. One of the major ones is the Lost Sea. It's actually America's largest underground lake, and it's located in Sweetwater, Tennessee, not far from here, from my home, but it's in Monroe County. And there are a lot of underground caves, lots of just strange geographical anomalies.
When you say underground lake, is it something where people can get to? Can they see it?
Yes, they can actually visit it. There's actually a tour. It's about an hour long. You go down into the tunnel that they've created, man-made. You go down into the tunnel. The Cherokee actually held council meetings down there. There was once a tavern in there during the Prohibition times. Just a lot of rich history inside the cave. But then walking down about three-quarters of a mile down, you find this huge 4.5-acre lake underground completely.
Have you had Bigfoot stories out there?
Oh, yes, absolutely. But we have what we called in our southern dialect the white thing.
The white thing?
The white thing is what we called it. And
white thing.
Yeah, and something that I found so interesting in doing the research, and I had heard these stories about this white Bigfoot my entire life, but something that I found so interesting was that the Yeti, actually Yeti means that thing. So I thought, you know, no matter how far away we are, humanity is really similar. We're a lot more similar than we are different. But yes, he travels throughout the bottom lands of Monroe County. He's been people have witnessed him looking into windows. They say that he screams, and he sounds like a woman screaming. And there's been several sightings just all over the county.
And does it get widespread publicity?
Actually, years ago, I think it got more publicity than it does now, but. Years ago, people would just talk about it, and there would be a sighting in one place, and I guess the news sort of traveled, and people would say, oh, yeah, you know, there we saw it here a few nights ago, and then it was here. So people would talk about it, word of mouth. It would just travel that this thing was back, and, you know, here it is, and it comes and goes. And
all right, we're going to talk more about this, and I'm going to pinpoint some stories from your book, Tabitha, and just have you react to it. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Tabitha Prock with us. Her work, These Haunted Hills, somewhere out there in Tennessee. Tabitha, I'm going to throw out some thoughts that are in your book and have you elaborate on these stories. Doppelgangers.
Yes, we actually have two really great stories about doppelgangers in the book. And one was actually a family member who told this story over and over when I was a child, and it was just so interesting because this person was completely serious when they would tell the story. In the middle of the night, she gets up and she sees her sister walking just toward the house. And she comes into the house and she sort of puts her hand up and just rests her head on her hand against the wall as if maybe she's really sad about something and she won't speak or anything. And her sister's saying, you know, are you okay? Is everything okay? And she just thinks, well, she just walked here. She might have had a fight with somebody, you know, something. She can just go, you know, I'll let her be and she'll be okay later. And so the girl just walks into the bedroom and she went back to check on her later and she was not there. And so she called her sister later and her sister had been home the entire time. And she has no explanation whatsoever except for that her sister was going through a very difficult time and it could have been just something very supernatural that happened there.
Could have been. What's the other story?
Well, the other one was a small boy that looked exactly like this other child, and the mother was home and the other daughter, and she thought she saw her brother, and she kept saying, you know, he's trying to scare me. He's peeking around the corner at me, and he's doing all these things trying to scare me. And she kept saying, you know, stop that. And then he would disappear for a little bit, and then he would come back. And finally the mom went all over the house thinking, you know, he was supposed to be with his other cousins. They shouldn't even be here right now. And sure enough, they pull in later, and the little boy jumps out of the car. He's been with the cousins all day, and there was no little boy ever on the property. And he looked just like the other son. So,
what is the Cane Creek Massacre story?
That is a very historical thing that happened here in Monroe County, and there have been just numerous reports. There is a house actually that's located very close to the site of that massacre. The massacre actually happened in 1760. There is a fort here called Fort Loudoun. It was named after the Earl of Loudoun. They started to build it when the British moved in, and they were trying to ally with the Cherokee against the French at the time. And they lived there. Settlers came in from Britain, and soldiers brought their wives. They had children born there. And they were getting along with the Cherokee for a while until I think there were several Cherokee that were held hostage and eventually killed by the British at Fort Prince George in South Carolina. And the Cherokee decided that they would not stand for that. So they laid siege to the fort. And in 1760, they finally said, after almost starving, the people decided they would surrender. And they were told that they could get safe passage out of the area. That didn't happen. Mm-hmm. They got about 15 miles from the fort, camped out, and the next morning, about 30 of the men were killed. And I think there was about 230 people in all, men, women, and children. And some of them were taken hostage. Later, a few were released, some died, and then a few actually stayed on with the Cherokee and lived within the tribe later. So it was a brutal massacre there. And
any hauntings in that area?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, there is actually a house located very close to that massacre, and it has been just, they're constant. They hear screaming at night. They hear babies crying. Certain times of the year are worse than others. There are always strange noises and just unexplained sightings in the area of just shadows and things happening near there. There's also an area not far from there that a couple of fishermen, they were going fishing, and they had their lights out. And, I mean, this little area, you can see across the water very easily. And they had a night light that would not shine to the other side of the bank. And there was just no way. This light would shine for, you know, a long, far away, any other right. direction. But it would not shine in this certain direction. It would just be total darkness. So that was very strange.
Tapitha, for Halloween, what has been one of the scariest or spookiest things that's ever happened to you?
Actually, on Halloween night, when I was about 15, we lived just above a funeral home. And there, the house that we lived in was just so strange. You always felt like somebody was watching you, or you were never alone in the house. And I happened to be somehow ended up alone at home that night, and I could hear trick-or-treaters outside, and it was getting pretty late, and I was just in the living room trying to watch TV, and I thought I heard my family pulling in. Nobody was really outside, and so I went to the bedroom to look out the window to see if somebody was trying to play tricks on me, and I would hear people just all around the house, and I kept checking, and there was nobody around the house, and it just really scared me. I just couldn't explain that at all. The family came in maybe an hour later, but it was just so noisy that night.
You probably knew what they were.
Yeah.
Donley Cabin. What's that?
Donley Cabin is actually located in Cherokee National Forest, and it was built, just the very primitive part of the cabin was built during the Civil War. They say that old man Donley decided just that he was going to live there in that area, and he built a cabin, and I think he was, I'm not sure if he was for or against the war, but he didn't want to fight in it, but he built this cabin there, and over the years, they built onto it, and it's remained, and today, you can actually rent the cabin for, I think it's $35 a night. It's very primitive. You have to take in your backpacks and everything, but I had a couple of friends who rented it on Halloween night thinking, oh, this is going to be, you know, really fun, but once they got there and it started to settle, and this is a place that you can get very close to this place and you start to just feel creepy. You just feel like there's people around you and they're watching you. And so they get to the cabin and they constantly hear things on the roof. The rocking chair on the front porch would not stop rocking. And then the scariest thing that happened was they were inside talking and they had a fire going and the little latch was on the door and there was no way the door could open, but it flew open just out of the blue. So they actually didn't make it through the night. They packed up and left.
I don't blame them.
Yeah, neither do I.
You said your grandmother shared an experience with you of a story. What was that?
Actually, my grandmother shared lots of stories with me. She's had several experiences with the paranormal. One of the things that happened to her was she was actually walking home one night from her sister's house, and as she was walking, she noticed that there was, ahead of her, there was always this little light that would shine, and she could not seem to get close to it, but it would just sort of get brighter as she got closer, and then it would back up a little, and it just really scared her. So she thought, I'm not sure what this is, you know, somebody may be trying to abduct me, or, you know, something. So she actually went back to her sister's house and stayed the night. And the next day, somebody, some police officer or somebody from the county sheriff's department came by and they said, you know, we just wanted you to know that somebody broke out of jail and they're around here and we just want you to be aware because they are dangerous. We think they could be very dangerous. So she always felt like that was some sort of strange thing warning her not to go down the, you know, the road to home because of that.
Tabitha, you've written some stories about ghost children. Those are the freaky cases. Those things get to me.
They are very scary.
What's going on out there?
Well, one of the most interesting things is it's been talked about for years as a little girl who seems to be sighted in the very same place all the time, and it's near this bridge, and there's a road called Belcher Gap Road, and people have seen this child apparently in the field just sort of playing, and the craziest thing about it is that people have actually called the police to say there is a child out here alone in this, you know, sort of vacant area in this field, and it's getting dark and we're sort of concerned about her. So the police have actually had to go out several times until they realized these calls are coming because there's this little girl out here and she does not exist actually. So it's happened several times. The police have come out, there's nothing, and then they realize this is the same report. That's very strange.
Have you had stories of ghosts communicating via telephone?
Yes, absolutely. There was actually several calls that came in to a couple of people, and there was no way that it could have happened. The call came in to their phone around 3 a.m. one morning, and they thought something was terribly wrong. It was from his mother, and they called back, and there was no answer. The second time they called back, they actually thought that something had picked up the phone, and they kept trying to think, you know, is something wrong? Is she hurt? And they never could get an answer. So this happened a couple more times, and the next day they talked to her, and she said, well, you know, I was working the night shift like I always do. She was a nurse, mm-hmm. and nobody was in the house at the time. And that actually came from a house where the former occupant had actually died in the house. And so she's had quite a few things happen to her in that house.
Well, you know, these spirits, they do somehow communicate. You know, I've heard a number of stories from people who answer the phone and they get a crackling, or with mm-hmm. caller ID, it says like all nines or all ones or something weird like that.
Yes, absolutely. That has happened. And there's just no way to explain how they do it, but they apparently are able to do it.
Well, thank God they're not getting collect calls from there, huh?
Exactly. Yes,
that's all we need.
Some with that.
Well, one of course, the great stories in Europe, of course, and in the United Kingdom, has to do with little fairies and mm-hmm. special powers of little creatures.
Yes.
You have those out there too.
We do. We have Cherokee fairies, or the Cherokee little people.
What are they?
They are called several different names. One is called the Nunahi, or the little people of the Cherokee. There's the water people of the Cherokee. The Nunahi Cherokee are tiny little people who live sort of underground or in the rocks, and they supposedly don't like for people to creep upon their little living quarters. They say that they can sort of cause people to become lost in the woods if they get a little too close to where they live. And they've also been known to be benevolent to people as well, to help them find their way if they're lost or sick in the forest. So there's several stories throughout history. James Mooney's stories from years ago show up over and over again, these accounts of the Cherokee little people living in this area.
What does your gut tell you? Are these real creatures?
You know, it's very interesting. I would really like to know for sure, but there are just so many different accounts that it just causes me to believe that there's some truth to this somewhere. So I really continue to search that out and to look for more accounts, and it's just very interesting to me, and it always has been since I was a child. The other people, the water people, are supposedly not so nice, and they can cause you all sorts of problems in the water, and they can pull you in. And you know,
really?
All of the old, yes, the mermaid-type stories that the Cherokee apparently have, water people that are very much like that, and they aren't so nice.
Huh.
They don't like you going around into the river or anything. And the river was a very sacred place for the Cherokee, and that could be one of the reasons that, you know, they didn't want to mess with the water too much.
Have people died that you know of, or that there are some records of that, you know, they were in a lake and they got pulled under or something?
There is one location in Monroe County that several people, they say that it's just a really bad undertow. There's like a little whirlpool. We have a beautiful river that runs through Monroe County, Tellico River. And in that location, several places there, people have actually died kayaking or swimming. And there's been some pretty tragic deaths, yes, in Tellico River.
So you've talked about little people, but you also have giants out that way.
Yes, I believe we do. Actually, I have an eyewitness account. That would be my dad. And actually...
Gotta believe dad.
Gotta believe my dad, yeah. Well, he started to tell these stories to me when I was very small, and I was just enthralled with the giant stories. But as he told it, when he was a young child, probably 10 or 11 years old, and this would have coincided with the time when archaeologists did come in and do a lot of excavating of different areas of Monroe County, the mounds, because they are currently, most of them are covered by the Tellico Lake now. So before that, there was a lot of excavation happening, and he came upon this one group that were doing some excavating in Tellico, and he watched them uncover just slowly, and he would tell me exactly how carefully they removed all of the covering, and they would measure, you know, out everything, and he watched them uncover a skeleton, and he said, I watched them measure, and they measured... Across the skeleton's chest was 24 inches, and the length of the skeleton was at least 7 feet. And he said that the man looked down at me and said, young man, can you imagine how big this person was with his entire flesh and everything? And he never forgot that. He always remembered that story.
And what's an area without great UFO and alien stories, Tabitha? What do you have out there?
Of course. We actually have been visited by possibly something that created an authentic crop circle. We had some researchers come in who apparently did a very good job at documenting this. And we had the first one, I think it was in May of 2007. And it was actually a Celtic symbol or insignia, which was very interesting because they found similarities of this Celtic symbol in some shale that was found in some of the mounds that were excavated, of the ancient mounds. So that was, to me, was a very interesting anomaly to find something that was thousands of years old that was very similar to something that we don't know. We have no idea.
Have you had mutilation stories out there or abduction cases, Tabitha?
That we know of, we have not had any mutilation stories. There have been people who, through the years, have gone missing or have, you know, mysteriously gotten lost in the forest. I think that happens just all over the world, but nothing very, very strange.
How do people get your book, These Haunted Hills?
Actually, you can find it on Amazon.com, and it's in print as well as in Kindle, on the Kindle version, and it's $2.99 for the Halloween special for the Kindle version.
So when you walk around, do people point at you and go, that's the ghost woman who writes
about I'm sure they will now. Yeah, they some of the schools have really enjoyed having the book. They've had it in the classroom because it does have a lot of historical accounts and East Tennessee superstition and lore that's very much a part of our culture. So people have had fun with it. We've had a lot of fun with it.
It's fun.
Yes, it is fun. It's very much fun.
Well, you're a delight, Tabitha. Enjoy the rest of your Halloween and keep in touch with us, will you?
I sure will, and I'll enjoy the rest of Ghost to Ghost.
It's just about ready to start. Tabitha Prock with us, the name of her book, These Haunted Hills. So just sit back and enjoy in a moment, of course. Darken the room, light a candle, because Ghost to Ghost is about to begin.